In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Girl, real talk. This whole, it's new year, time to reinvent myself trash, is not the vibe for 2024. You can find someone who loves you for you, as you are. You don't need to read a stack of self-help books, only eat sad salads, or like start meditating at 5 a.m. to be ready for dating. So yeah, my advice is to download Bumble and find someone who embraces you the way you are right now. Let me know how it goes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Big box retailers, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a bill in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. Senate Bill 1838 would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, visit handsoffmyrewards.com and tell them to oppose credit card routing legislation paid for by the Electronic Payments Coalition.
So astrology like located me in time and space, and I felt like I existed for the first time. I was like, oh my God, someone sees me. I actually have an outline. I am different than everyone else. And I'm made up really specifically, and so is everybody else. So I got to try to be me and not anyone else here.
I'm Jordan Kistner, and you're listening to Thresholds, a weekly series of free-ranging conversations with writers and artists about moments of epiphany or transformation that changed their lives and their work. A moment that they stepped across, like a threshold, into something new, and the way that experience changed everything they wrote afterwards. Quick note, I, Jordan, am taking a brief break from hosting this spring to work on some other projects. And while I am off mic, we are really lucky to have Mira Jacob occupying the interviewer seat. Mira is a novelist, a graphic memoirist, and an all-around brilliant mind and excellent conversationalist. She was our very first Thresholds guest, and I have never stopped wanting to listen to her talk. I also was excited by who she wanted to talk to for these shows. I'll be back later in the spring, but until then, Mira's got the host mic.
I read my first Chani Nicholas horoscope in 2014 and thought to myself, what the hell is this? My second thought was more. Find more. Where the horoscopes I had grown up with had a kind of mirror, mirror on the wall vibe that always left me feeling like a desperate narcissist or a shrewd narcissist, Chani's landed differently. Choosing clarity over obscurity, groundedness over woo-woo, her voice was that of the practical revolutionary. Yeah, she pinpointed why my extreme Capricornness left me on the occasional spiritual mountaintop, deeply alone and muddling through it. But she placed that trait in the context of a larger community, a shifting political landscape, a country that was fast becoming Trump's America. I clung to her words for the entire 3 years I drew my memoir about raising a brown boy here. I was hardly alone. So many of us found Chani in that moment, found something both hopeful and actionable in her reading of the stars. I still look to them at the beginning of each week as a kind of cheerful compass, a wink across the universe from a fellow traveler who wants us to understand how the sky at the time of our birth gave us our own unique imprint, and how that imprint can change the systems that are hurting all of us. If that sounds like a lot for a horoscope, it is. And her book, You Were Born for This, is all that and more. I'm also deeply addicted to her app, which I cannot recommend enough. I was thrilled to talk to her.
You know, I think meeting my dad's second wife's mother, her name is Anita Levin, and she was one of the, meeting her was one of the most formative moments of my life, because she was the first person that I met. I was 11 years old when we met. And she was the first person that I'd ever met that felt like an adult that was trying to be an adult, you know, like that, an adult that was working on themselves and trying to help other people. And she was a Reiki master and was someone that was just like an incredibly wise and powerful person. And I think she was one of the first women that I met that was really in her power in a way that wasn't, like, my grandmother was really powerful, but I don't think she was really conscious of her power, or, you know, came out of kind of a different era. And when I met Anita, she just had a presence about her that was very unapologetic and was clear. She made it clear that she was working on herself. Like, there was a conscious awareness to her, like nothing got by her. And so I went from, you know, mostly being surrounded by adults that were trying to be unconscious and they were really in their addiction, to meeting her and she was doing the opposite. And it made me feel for the first time in my life like another way is possible.
This is so interesting because there's two things that you're saying that that honestly would not have occurred to me as a kid. And one is that this was an adult who, I think you said, was trying to be an adult, was showing up as an adult. But mm-hmm. also part of that was that she's a work in progress. She's actively working on herself. Are those the two things?
Yeah. Yeah.
You said that other than this, other adults in your life had not kind of shown up that way. Did you just say that they were in their addiction?
Yes. So most of the people, I grew up in a small town that was very much a party. And it was very much like the remnants of the 60s and 70s that just folded into the 80s and just kept going, really. But everyone was very much like a, if we want to use like Jungian terms, like puer, puella, Peter Pan type characters. Everyone wanted to remain young. And when you're caught in your addiction, there's a lot of negating of responsibility, which is the antithesis of maturity. So when I met Anita, I was like, oh, this person feels mature in a way that is. And she was also very gregarious and funny and, you know, very much like, also had a very youthful spirit. But I think it was about wanting to be accountable for who she was and what she did and the energy that she brought into the room. Whereas I grew up in a party, so everyone was just kind of broken into a million different fragments because you never know who you're going to get when you're surrounded by people that are in and out of being inebriated.
Yeah. I'm so curious about the party. And also, who are you then at the party when you're growing up in it?
When you're growing up in a party, you're either you're invisible or you are a bummer.
Oh my God. Those are not great choices.
Mostly you're invisible, but if you dare to say anything or take up space, then you're a party pooper. You're a bummer. You're crashing the party. You're a voice of maybe not reason, but you're a voice that reminds the people that are in charge of you that they actually have a responsibility to someone besides themselves that they're not adhering to. So you are the repository of a lot of things. You're also, if you're the only one conscious at a party and you're a child, then you're also absorbing a lot of stuff that's way beyond your years.
Yes.
And you don't know how to make sense of it.
Okay. So this goes directly to one of the questions that I have about the work you do. And specifically, I think one of the things that we've talked about before, and I know I write you every once in a while to be like, this one especially is amazing, but there is a really strong voice in your work, right? There's mm-hmm. And especially as somebody who, as you just said, if you're the one that's speaking up at the party, you're either invisible or you're the one that's speaking up and therefore you're a bummer. Mm-hmm. But the thing that you do constantly in this very, you know, highly entertaining, sometimes disarming, sometimes really straightforward, and then I'm just on the floor listening to you tell me what it means that my Mars is retrograding. but you do this thing where you very consciously interrupt the flow of what everyone is, you know, everyone else is just sort of running through their day, unthinkingly doing things. And you speak directly to that and say, here's something to think about. And here's something else to think about. And I'm so curious when that started happening for you. Like, when did you realize that this was something that you wanted to bring into the world?
I think I came to it really kicking and screaming in a lot of ways.
Oh, tell me.
Well, you know, I dropped out of 3 grad programs, I think, in a row. I tried to be any and everything else but an astrologer. And it was the only thing that worked in my life. So eventually I just succumbed to it and then just started winging it. You know, like I always have the astrology to talk about. And because I've been obsessed with healing and healing modalities since I met Anita, which was when I was 11. And like, I learned that there was, you know, such a thing called therapy and you could go to people and like maybe feel better or learn some skills about how to be a human and like live a life. Uh-huh. I've been like obsessed with that. Like, what does it mean to heal? And so, and then I also was very much into acting and performing. And so I feel like both of those things coming together has given me, both of those things show up in my work now in ways that I would have never known back then, but that I'm like, that was really helpful. All those acting classes were actually really helpful for me learning how to deliver a statement about something, because that's now literally what I do. But none of this was planned. All of it was an accident.
Okay. So wait, you dropped out of grad school 3 times, you just said.
Yeah.
Could
3
you just
grad
tell me,
schools in a row.
Okay. What for what? Grad school for what?
I was going for my MFT, marriage and family therapist.
Got you. Okay. License. So you knew it was going to be in healing of some sort.
Yeah. At that uh-huh. point. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the astrology comes in how?
Well, the astrology was always there because the first time I got a reading, I was 12. So I met Anita and I got an astrology reading basically at the same time. And she's the reason why I got an astrology reading. She sent my dad and his new wife, her daughter, and their kids and me to a group astrology reading. And the astrologer just like, you know, laid it all out for us and was like, this is who you are and that's who she is and this is who he is and that's who. And I was like, how do you know that? And, you know, when you're a kid, you just think you are everybody and everybody is you. And so when someone's able to distinguish people from each other, at least for me, it was mind-blowing and also wild because I think I was always trying to figure out who to be like or like, how do you be an adult? How do you be a person? Like I felt like I didn't come with an instruction manual. I know I just sound like such a Gen Xer right now,
You just sound like a human to me. What does that say?
Like, none of us got parenting. So yeah, we all just ended up like, I'm really lost. It's weird to be a person. And so astrology like located me in time and space. And I felt like I existed for the first time. I was like, oh my God, someone sees me. I actually have an outline. Mm. I am different than everyone else. And I'm made up really specifically. And so is everybody else. So I got to try to be me and not anyone else here.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Big box retailers, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a bill in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. Senate Bill 1838 would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, visit handsoffmyrewards.com and tell them to oppose credit card routing legislation paid for by the Electronic Payments Coalition.
Wow. Wait, the first time you realized that, was that scary or empowering or both?
I think it was just, I was so hungry for anything like that, that it was just like, you know, having a drink of water in the desert. Cause so it wasn't like even like a conscious thought. It was just like, I need more of this. What is this?
When you started with astrology, you were writing. I've seen you make this, that's how I first experienced you, I should say. I experienced you first through the writing.
Yeah.
And then since then, I have watched you sort of emerge more and more across social media as a person who can also speak very eloquently to the moment. Sometimes I'm like, how did you do that in one take? But I'm curious, were you doing both at the same time and I was just seeing the writing and you were also doing the kind of spoken... Were you doing readings for people at the same time where you sort of had to inhabit, you had to kind of have the thoughts and inhabit them and be able to speak them in the same moment?
Yeah. I mean, the readings came first. Like that's what I did first. I would sit down and give people readings. And then I started writing horoscopes and I was like, oh, I really like writing. And then I was doing writing and workshops all the time. And so I started to develop that muscle. And then everything kind of just got wild and too big. And then we ended up building, you know, a tech company and launching an app. And now I have a team of writers that, you know, I've got a director of content and she oversees like another team of writers. And so within like, that's happened within the last 2 years. So I haven't written in like a year and a bit, like consistently in a professional astrological kind of sense. So my writing now is a private thing. Like I'm writing something, but it's nowhere near, you know, the stage where I would put it anywhere in the world where anybody else would see it. So I'm writing for myself and I'm not quite sure what it's going to turn into.
How is that?
It's really, oh, it's so good, but it's so intense and very cathartic, really healing because I'm just showing up and writing about what's going on for me that morning. And then I've got a kind of structure that I'm gonna move into, but I'm not quite there yet. So what I realized I was doing is I'm just like kind of pouring out whatever's there onto the page and then seeing how it's gonna take shape. And then I'll start writing into a structure. But I think I kind of just needed to like let out like a primal scream in writing form.
Okay, I have a question. Go with me for a minute. So I used to write pop-up video for years. You remember that little show, the bloop, and it would tell you about the music video. Okay, so when I was doing that, one of the things that I noticed is that because I was writing with the audience in mind and because it was such a kind of tight form, okay, at one point, I'm not joking, I woke up in the middle of the night. Somehow I had convinced myself in my sleep that if I held my pillow above my head while I got my comforter under my feet, I would have written the perfect sentence. I don't know why this made sense to my sleeping body, but it really did. Makes and sense. I think it was just the amount of duress I was under with trying to write for an audience. And one of the things I noticed when I went back to grad school was, because I left to go to grad school, which, believe me, everyone was howling at that idea. Mm-hmm. But when I went back, it took me a while to lose the feeling of being watched as I wrote. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to lose the feeling of, like, I have been doing this kind of writing for consumption, mm-hmm. and now it's just me. Did that happen for you at all, or was it just straight to relief?
No, it's much harder to write without that kind of, well, it's like once you're used to that kind of training, like this is the thing, this is the little trough I have to fill up, and then I go on to the next one, and I go on to the next one. It's really like, I call writing horoscopes the bartending of writing, because you're just like, got to write 12 of these, and then I got to write them again next week, and I got to write them again next week. It's just like, you know, do the dishes, pour the drinks, do the dishes again. Obviously, I also bartended a lot in my life. stable money. I dream about it. That's what I dream. I'm like, I can always go back to bartending.
Uh-huh.
So then when I go to write other stuff, it's like sloshy, like has no form. There's no point to it. I babble a lot until I can grasp a sentence. It's kind of annoying at first because I don't know what I'm supposed to write. You know, I'm just like, okay, I'm here at the page. It's kind of like morning pages and just seeing what comes out. But it's not as, there is an arc, like the beginning, middle, and end. Like I'll start somewhere where I'm really cranky generally, and then write about that, and then kind of move through something, and then by the end I feel better. It's kind of like a meditation.
All right, I have some word questions for you. Just one of the things right away, and you, I think this is one of your many bios. It says astrologer, astrologist is not a thing, or it used to say that. can you tell me just what, when did that come up, and when did you decide that that needed to be addressed?
I don't know, because I'm an asshole.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
People, no. You know, like some people say astrologist. I don't know. There's a friend of mine who did a podcast on it. I haven't listened to it yet. There's a whole like discussion about it. Most people that are astrologers call themselves astrologers. And most people that aren't astrologers or don't know that much about it say astrologist.
Uh-huh.
That's as far as I go with it.
Okay. Because I feel like for me, when I read that, not knowing you before I knew you, it was a tip off to this, to the idea of the seriousness of the work. Honestly, I was like, oh, we can't say astrologist. We have to stay astrologer. And this person knows that. And so now I'm signed up to know whatever else this person knows about this thing that I also don't know. Right. It really did that kind of that sort of magic work of like, I am an authority and this is what I'll start here. I'll start by titling myself.
It just like rubs me the wrong way. You know, when someone says your name incorrectly and you're like, that's not how it's pronounced. That's how I feel when someone says astrologist. But what do I know?
Yeah. No. What do you know? Foremost astrologer. So the other question I have is, because there are so many that I think of as kind of Channyisms. My favorite is but and also.
You were going to say that. I try not to say it anymore because I had like people like quoting me and making art about it. I was like, oh my God, it kind of mean.
But it's so good. Tell me about but and also. Please tell me about but and also.
Well, I'm such a fanatic about language. And I'm always trying to relay a message in a way that is going to speak to the people that I'm speaking to in my mind. And I'm never wanting people to remain in fear or think that anything has to end up in one specific way. And because I'm not talking to people in person, I'm just like babbling away in my recording booth and trying to translate the astrology to them. I want to like open, I want to keep us open to how things can turn out and to what we can do with the moment. But mostly it was just an unconscious thing.
Have you ever had anyone get upset with you about a horoscope?
Everyone's upset with me. The world is a place of people that are upset with everybody. I get people all kinds of upset with me about all kinds of things. Always have.
Because they feel that
you've done something wrong.
Okay. But is that it? When they get upset with you, is it because they feel like you've prescribed a future that they don't want? Or what is the general level of upset about? Yeah.
Generally, people are like, why don't you just stick to the astrology, lady, and stop talking about politics?
Which I think saw that yesterday.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did someone say that to me yesterday?
Yeah. Of course.
I think it's hilarious because politics are people. And it is how we live and exist in the world. We live in structures and systems. So I'm like, that's so funny that you would want me to not talk about what impacts us, like our what holds us here. Like what?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's what people mostly get upset with me about, which I love because it means they had an expectation of who I was and what my work was about. I don't know how they missed that piece, but I love disappointing people in that way. I think it's really important for me to be disappointing to you because
yeah,
you don't know me and you shouldn't, you know, think you know anybody. And I think when you get disappointed with someone, you weren't seeing who they really were in the first place. So especially when it's with a stranger, you know, it's different if you know somebody, but if it's with a stranger, it's like, yeah, I'm complex and disappointing and that's good for you.
This is hitting me in all the therapy spots. Just want to say I had to like hold that one for a minute. I'm going to go say that to myself when I'm driving home. If you're disappointed with someone because you didn't see them. But really, there's also something like I feel like the space that a lot of people hold for astrology is like somewhere between like witchcraft, hocus pocus, mm-hmm. and like a fortune cookie, right? There's this way in which you are not supposed to take it seriously or take it to specifically talk about these many systems that we are under the boot of. And this is exactly, you have gone exactly in that direction. I did not see that actually in astrology before. Mm. Were there other people that led you to that, or is that something that you came to on your own?
I have a really hard time being anything but who I am. So, and that's a very fortunate and very unfortunate quality about me that if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to be really honest about it. And so when I started writing, I was like, okay, it was because I saw things in the world that were reflected in the astrology. And I've always been a person that's really interested in the world and also in injustice. And because I grew up in the way that I did, where no one wanted to see the truth, my whole being is bent towards, but look at this thing. This is what's causing us pain, or this is where the suffering is. Why don't we look here and solve it? Because I'm still trying to like fix my, you know, it's part of my way of being in the world because I was trying to deal with my own trauma, I think. So there's like a lot of similarities between growing up in a family system, which, you know, most of us do, that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe the whole family is ignoring this thing, and looking at the larger system and how brutal it is and saying, how do we live like this? Like, we could fix this. And that frustration, you know, I had, and a lot of us have as kids, is like, we grow up and we're like, okay, I'm going to try to do something about this. And so that was how I got into writing, because I was like, well, my lens is astrology, but I'm looking at all this other stuff and they match in this really specific way. And that I found interesting. And so I think it was just always part of my own therapeutic process to talk about what is not working and what could be.
Do you remember when you wrote your first horoscopes?
I would write, I think, blog posts more. Like I would write about what was going on. And then I started writing horoscopes, and they were just so long and unedited and rambly and horrible, I'm sure. And then I started to like convince my friends to edit for me, and it was like a long process. And then when Sonny and I got together, she became my editor and saved me. And anybody who read me.
We are talking about your wife.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who, right. Just in case people don't know. Who also shares this same need to both truth tell and interrupt and rethink the structures. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way to say that?
Yeah. Sonia Passy. She is the CEO of the company Channy Nicholas Incorporated that does the app and all the other things. And then she also runs a nonprofit called Free From. And that nonprofit works at the intersection of gender-based violence and economic security or economic injustice via gender-based violence. And she is a brilliant thinker and activist and doer that knows how to solve and make way for systems change, I think.
Yeah.
She moves right to solution.
Yes, I know this too. I love it. It is one of her amazing qualities, right?
Yeah.
To sort of see through it. And I sometimes think like, how did these two people meet each other? It's amazing. Were there actual lightning bolts around them? But I think the thing that you're saying about when you're first writing the horoscopes, I'm really curious about how long it took you to feel like, oh, this is my voice. I have found my voice. Because I know that for me, like even when you were saying that, oh, it was long and it was rambling and it wasn't really the thing. And then there's that person. And then there's the person right now who, if I were to say, Channy, you have to write the 12 horoscopes right now, you would know how to go into a room and dial it in right away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the gap between those things, I'm always so curious about this because it's always to me about how did, like, at what point did you understand, no, this is my voice and this is the thing I have to say? Like, this is where I feel like I'm most at my true purpose. How far into it did you feel that feeling?
What I know for sure is that you have to do things at least a million times before you have any idea what you're doing. And like every time you do something that you're going to do again, like sit down and write 500 words or sit down and write 12 horoscopes or whatever the thing is that you're doing, every time you do it, you're energetically coding your system for the kind of time, talent, energy, thought, whatever it's going to take, physical energy, emotional energy, intellectual energy, all of it. And so I just know that every time I do something that's repetitive, I'm mapping that in my being and that it's going to be easier next time and clearer next time, just a little tiny, like nano fraction easier, but enough to have like a little bit more flow. And it doesn't mean that Sunday's writing isn't like just an avalanche of despair and hardness. And then other days it's like, oh, okay, I wrote those really quickly or I wrote that thing really quickly. But still, all of those little moments are so important. And so I think I knew that something was working when people would like come up to me and say things. Like I was just so shocked that anyone would read anything that I wrote. And so I was like, oh, well, this is landing somewhere. And then I felt a responsibility to the art of writing itself. And then I started to build a relationship with my talent in a way that I never had before. And in a way that I felt was reciprocal. Like I had done other things that were close to my talent that were good, but nothing that ever felt like this is mine. And when I started to write, I was like, oh, this is mine. This is what's always been here. This is what I've always wanted to do. This is that part of that gift or that talent thing that I've been given that I've got to respect and foster and nurture.
When I think of building a relationship, I think of showing up, right? There's a part of it's just like showing up for the work, and this, as kind of disparate as that work can be, what does it look like for you to build a relationship with your talent? What did that look like?
You got to show up. You have to be consistent. That was how I did it. I had to be consistent. In the beginning, it was like, I'd write 3 sentences and then lie on the floor. I can't go on. Like, just so ridiculous. And like the kind of mental, the kind of energy it takes sometimes is just bananas. You're like, I'm just writing 400 words. Why is this so hard? But, your brain gives out, there's things that happen. You got to deal with life, all that other stuff. So it's just like, come rain or shine, come good days and bad, come all of it. I got to write and I got to put it out and then I got to get over it and then I got to do it again. And so it was like being in that mill was really helpful.
Can we talk for a second about the responsibility part? Because I know there's the responsibility of showing up for your work. Also, this thing that you were talking about before, you would see people that would say to you, oh, I read that and this is how it impacted me. Mm-hmm. Did you start feeling a responsibility toward your readers at some point, and that changed the way you felt about the writing?
Definitely felt a responsibility. And it changed because, there's more pressure when people are waiting for something and they're going to read it. Then there's a pressure. And when you're writing something in kind of real time and there's stuff happening in the world that is just horrific and just kind of opening up all kinds of historical wounds and trauma and all the rest, and you got to put something out that speaks to it, it's a tremendous pressure. And it's also an impossible task. And so you have to like grant yourself some grace and room and hold things, which is with as much care and love as you can, and also kind of let yourself off the hook while being very responsible to your audience. So it's like this mix of things. It's like, I'll do my very best and then I'll let it go, because I got to do it all again in a day.
Right. And there's no perfection actually to be found.
There's zero. I can't say that I actually feel that when I write or put something out, especially when I was writing like horoscopes every week, and then also statement pieces like essays, is like you just don't even have time to think about it beyond, is this correct? Is this a decent sentence? Is this cohesive and as a statement? And then you can't dwell on it because it's already old by the time you put it out.
Do you have rules for yourself? Because it also makes me think that there has to be a fair amount of self-care involved. I'm asking, obviously, you know this, but I when I put out a book that was speaking to a really painful cultural moment, I found that people came to me with a lot of pain, a lot of things that they felt were reflected in the book, and they felt seen, but also there was a tremendous amount of trauma. Mm-hmm. There was a tremendous amount of talking to people about their trauma. Mm-hmm. And there were kind of, it was a different way of being in the world than I had ever been. And it seems to me that that might happen to you a lot, because you are directly speaking to them in a way that even I wasn't. I was writing a memoir, but you are directly speaking to their lives. And I'm curious if you have sort of rules for yourself or kind of methods of self-care that you enact for yourself.
When I'm out in the world and if that
When you're out in the world and people are kind of asking you, you feel the level of need that people have. Cause I feel like people need a lot right now. And cause when we all deserve so much, frankly,
Yeah, folks are not okay. You know, there's a lot of not okay out there. And I think it's really important to remember that. And, you know, the pandemic did so much. And I know we talk about that, but I don't really think we have any idea what it actually did. And it deepened our relationship to whatever was there. And it's such a moment that we're coming out of, and so much got unveiled and uncovered. And so right now, I think that there's just still a lot of that residue, and it's quite invisible now because we've kind of, you know, quote unquote, moved on. But a lot has shifted for people. So when you put your work out in the world, you're speaking, when you're speaking to people, I mean, I would think, Mira, even with your novels, like with the novel before, like, didn't people have the same kind of, like, when you're telling your story and people can see themselves in your story?
Yes. Yeah.
I would think people are always like, oh, I relate. And this is why I relate. This is how I relate. And I just know that it's not about me. It has nothing to do with me. And people are having an experience of themselves in front of me, and that it's going to happen. And the most helpful thing I can do is try to like wrap them up and it just has nothing to do with me. So I tend to, you know, give it back to them. And I think it's really important for artists not to take that home. And also just to honor the person in front of you and what's happening for them, but to not feel like it's yours to solve or carry or anything. It's like a human having a human experience. And it's, you know, when you see somebody that's like famous or their work has touched your life, it's just like a kind of thing that happens in us because we're human and we've felt so touched by that work. And so there's a beauty to it, and there's definitely things that can feel exhausting, and there's definite need to take care of yourself. I mean, but I'm not like y'all. Like, I'm not like, you know, y'all are on these circuits. You go to conferences, you are in front of people like night after night after night. Like my writer friends, like poet friends, like the kinds of audience interaction that y'all have, I don't have it in the same way. So I can only imagine what that is like when you put out a body of work like that, that is so personal and so impactful for people to receive, that then you're just like, you know, signing books and you're there and people can emote everywhere. And
I mean, I will say you're right that we're out in terms of the impact of the work. I know people who quite literally align their days with when you're releasing. Right? When you're releasing your next, like, the week's horoscope. So, you know.
Yeah.
No pressure there. Really, no pressure.
But I'm not in front of audiences, like, in that way, in person, in IRL.
Right. You are on social media a lot, though.
Yeah, but I don't see those people. Like, I don't know you. I don't read the comments. I got too much to work. Like, I got so much to do. I can't, you know.
Wait, do you really not read the comments?
Most of the time, no.
Oh, I love this for you.
I am not here to manage people's everything.
Do you think you got better at that as your reach grew? Yeah.
I think it was just, don't you think, like, when social media happened, especially, again, for us Gen Xers who didn't grow up with it, but like when it happened, I think all of us felt this like personal responsibility to talk to people on the internet. And then you're like slowly like, oh, I can't talk to these people. I can't talk to everyone. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, even if you have, you know, 10 followers or something, like, if you don't know them, you can't just have conversations with strangers online and get anything done in your day.
Yeah. And I also live with this real juncture. I wonder if you do too. Like, I remember life before, but I truly do. I remember life before the phones. I remember life before. So I remember the emotions that you did not perform for anyone.
Yes.
And I remember moving through whole emotional states that were in no way packaged for anyone else's consumption.
Oh my God. Exactly.
And exactly. So part of like, I guess part of what I'm asking about a little bit is because it is so jarring to me, this idea that you're supposed to take other people's emotions and help them package them, and help them make sense of them. And as you concurrently narrate your own, like, it just feels like a lot of hats, right?
Yeah, that's not it.
That's not it.
You're not a therapist. That's not your, like, that's not your role. Your role is as writer, as artist, as commentator, as storyteller. And everybody else's reaction to the work is theirs, and they have friends and they can get a therapist. You know, it's like, we all need to take care of ourselves. That's what it means to become adults. That's what that it means to recreate the world, is to do everything we can to become the adults that we wish we had. We desperately need that.
This goes back to your first, the first thing we were talking about.
My life thesis.
Yeah, this is your life thesis. But it really does. It goes right back to meeting. You said it was your dad's second wife.
Second wife's mom.
Sorry. Right.
So, you know, step grandmother of second father's other families.
I love how many, whatever.
Yeah.
So you met her at a point where it was obviously really pivotal for you, and it changed your life. I'm so curious, just to circle back on that a little bit, if 11-year-old Chani would be meeting Chani today, okay?
Yeah.
Right? If she would have met that person, if the you that you are today would have been an adult in her life, what would she have made of you?
You know what's wild? I actually had the wherewithal as like a 10-year-old, like right before my dad left his second wife. That was his third wife. Anyways, I remember being about 9, 10, and I visualized myself as an older person, and I had a braid, very specific. My hair. Her hair, my older me had a braid going down her back, like a French braid. And older me would sit at the end of my bed and talk to me and console me.
Oh, I love that for both of you.
So, I had a lot of that in my fantasy world. So, I mean, that's the work I try to do every day is, that's what I was doing today when I was writing. I was writing to that younger me, like, hey, I'm here. I love you. Like, I'm going to give you everything you need. Like, you don't have to look anywhere else for it. No one else is going to give it to you, actually. And I know you didn't get it from anybody else, but I'm here to give it to you. And it's like the work of talking to those young parts of self that didn't get what they needed is like one of the most important things that I can do in my day, is talk to those parts of me and just be like, I know you didn't have it, but all I can do right now is be what you didn't have and be relentless in my ability to hold space for you and remind you that you can relax now and you're safe. Like, I'm safe.
Thresholds is produced by Jordan Kistner and Drew Broussard. Music and editing by Laura Faye Oshawood of Arthur Moon. Our art is by Lorelei Grossman. Special thanks to our hosts at LitHub Radio. You can find more about our show, listen to past episodes, and get in touch at our website, thisisthresholds.com. Don't forget to rate and review our show at Apple Podcasts. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.